The University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee plays a vital role in shaping the future of Milwaukee and Wisconsin. UWM's diversity, academic excellence, and major public research contribute to the region's economic development and quality of life. Meet the people behind the creativity and discoveries at UWM today. Here's the host of UWM Today, Tom Lujack, Vice Chancellor for University Relations and Communications.
Tropical forests play a critical role in the health of our environment. About a third of the carbon dioxide in our world is stored in the trees and the plant life in those forests. But new research led by a UW-Milwaukee biologist is showing that that storage system is at risk because of a serious threat that exists in tropical forests today. Joining us on today's program is Stefan Schnitzer, UWM's professor of biological sciences, now also a member of the new School of Freshwater Sciences. Stefan is a research associate also with the Smithsonian Tropical Research Institute in Panama. Good to have you back on the program, Stefan. We had you on about a year ago, and you continue to do some fascinating research in the country of Panama.
Well, thanks a lot, Tom. It's a pleasure to be back.
So storing carbon is essential if our world has a hope of surviving in a way that we would want to live in it, isn't it?
Absolutely. The carbon that's floating around in the atmosphere in the form of carbon dioxide, it mixes pretty quickly, and then it gets pulled into the plant life. And plants basically pull that carbon dioxide out of the air, and they fix it into carbohydrates, and they essentially grow and make their trunks with it, if you're talking about trees, or their leaves and branches and roots. And so if tropical forests are pulling that carbon dioxide out of the air, they're storing it, and they, in a sense, are acting like big sponges for carbon dioxide, where they're pulling it out of the atmosphere. And then maybe after, depending on the tree species, 500 years, 600 years, a big tree will die and slowly re-release that carbon back into the atmosphere in the form of carbon dioxide.
And there's no surprise to the story that that's one of the reasons we want to protect our tropical forest. And that means, from a human standpoint, usually we think about not cutting them down, not burning down those forests because of, again, that role of acting as a sponge to the carbon dioxide and keeping it stored and locked away for a long period of time so that it's not out in our atmosphere. But your research suggests that there is yet another threat besides what we people do with our saws or with our matches.
Well, that's right. We just stumbled onto some of these findings in the last couple of years. And, normally when plants compete in tropical forests, people think it's more or less a zero-sum game where if one plant outcompetes the other one, it takes its carbon. And the general belief was that a certain ecosystem could store some certain level of carbon. And it didn't really exceed that. It didn't really go below unless it was a big disturbance, and then the carbon slowly accumulated again.
So basically, if you had a lot of green stuff in the forest, whether it's a tree or a plant, it's all good.
Yeah, exactly. But what we're finding is that these tropical forests are now changing a bit. And this is also an interesting discovery because people thought that climate change and global warming in particular was happening at the poles, where we're calving huge ice shelves and we're losing a lot of that polar ice cap that we have, and also up high on mountains. And people thought that the tropics were relatively stable and that they weren't changing because they're around the equator, right? They are on each side of the equator up to about 23 degrees north and south of the equator, and the temperature is fairly stable, the day length is fairly stable. And so people thought, well, they're not going to change much. But in fact, we're starting to find fairly large-scale structural changes of tropical forests. And one of the big ones is that the increase of woody vines is much faster than any other growth form. In fact, trees may be decreasing in their relative abundance and in their size, and the vines are increasing quite a bit. And vines respond very quickly to environmental conditions, and that's one of the things that we're learning.
Let's talk about these woody vines because most of us have, in our walk through the woods or a forest, have seen examples of of a vine wrapping itself around the tree and don't think much of it other than, well, that tree's got some company. It's got a companion there.
Yeah, that's right. And they're great companions, depending on your perspective. These vines are actually – the reason why you see them but you don't really notice them is they're fairly small compared to the trees that they climb. But – what their advantage is they use the architecture of that tree and they climb up the tree and then they put a huge amount of leaves over the top of the tree. And that is great for the vine, but it keeps the tree from getting a lot of sunlight. And without sunlight, the tree has a harder time pulling carbon out of the air and fixing it and growing. And so the vines have circumvented their need for building a big structure to ascend to the top of the forest. They use the trees to do that.
It becomes a giant ladder for the vine to take over.
Exactly. And so what the vine then does is it uses its energy just to grow more leaves and to expand its stems, not just on the one tree that it's climbed, but then it starts to climb on other trees and it goes from tree crown to tree crown. And they start to tie the whole forest together. At the same time, they have very low wood volume and wood density. And so when they stop trees from growing, they're not able to uptake and store the same amount of carbon that they displace in trees.
Have these always been around, these woody vines in the tropical forest?
Well, you know, I don't know the paleobotany literature too well, but from what I've read, there's evidence of these climbing growth forms for tens of thousands of years and millions of years actually in tropical forests, or what we now consider tropical forests, because their extent used to be much, much higher away from the equator. I mean, 50 million years ago, where we're standing now would have been a tropical forest. And from the fossil evidence, there are these slender, seemingly climbing growth forms even then.
So what's changed? What's happened that it is becoming identified as a greater risk to the environment than perhaps we might have realized 20 or 100 years ago?
Well, that's a great question, and that's something that we actually have a grant proposal pending with National Science Foundation to test the mechanisms precisely to see what it is that's driving this increase in tropical vines compared to tropical trees. And our insights into what the main drivers are come from our basic research. We need to know, you know, and just for fundamental research purposes, we've been studying what mechanisms allow vines to have high diversity and what mechanisms maintain their diversity, and also what factors explain their distribution. Are they in greater abundance in real wet forests or real dry forests or forests that experience droughts, strong droughts, which is very common in tropical forests? And what we found is that there are a number of things that the vines seem to like a lot. And one, first, they like disturbance. They like when trees fall, they respond really rapidly, they grow really fast, and they smother the regenerating trees. And so we've done studies where we found that after disturbance, the vines proliferate. I mean, they really love that kind of environment. It's hot and dry and sunny. We also find, if we look at a larger scale across the tropics, that these vines really favor areas that have a strong seasonal drought. And most forests do. There are far fewer vines in the really wet forests. But when the forests start to get really dry with a real strong dry season and then a fairly wet rainy season, they're also really abundant. And what this means is that the vines seem to capitalize when there are dry periods or when it's hot and sunny. And they're able to grow when the trees start to shut down a little bit because it gets – physiologically, it gets really taxing on the plants.
A couple of years ago, the New York Times in its science section had a picture of you right on the front page of that section standing in the middle of the forest. I believe it was in Panama. The story did a wonderful job of describing what you've been talking about on today's program, the proliferation of these roots. For the benefit of our listeners, let's paint a picture of exactly where you do this research. You spend a fair amount of your time each year in the country of Panama. I mean, really, really looking in detail at what these vines are doing.
Yeah, that's right. We spend about 5 months a year in the Republic of Panama. And the reason why we're actually working in a number of different sites, but Panama is my main research location. And the reason why we're there is because the Smithsonian Tropical Research Institute also is in Panama. And I'm affiliated with Smithsonian. They facilitate a lot of the research that we're doing. They're able to help get us permits and go through a lot of the bureaucracy of doing research out of the country. You know, you can't just walk into any forest and start cutting vines out of it without someone coming in and asking you what you're doing. So we've been in Panama for about 15 years doing a lot of this work. And also we're doing some work in Costa Rica, and we've worked in French Guiana and Borneo and Ecuador. But most of our work now is in Panama. And in Panama, there's a lot of forest left. A lot of it has never been cut, and it seems to be fairly pristine. A lot of it was protected when they built the Panama Canal because the forest is so important for the watershed. So we're doing a lot of work looking at how these plants are responding in what we think is a fairly natural environment.
How do you keep track of this? I mean, if you're in a forest, you talk about the vines growing quickly, but we're still probably not talking about a foot a day or the circumference magnifying in front of your eyes. What sort of tools do you use to measure who's in charge, whether it's the tree or these vines that are such a threat to them?
Well, we have a variety of different tools that we use, and some of them are very simple. We're just measuring their diameter every year or every 2 years or every 3 years over long periods of time. That's the simplest way. Now we've gone to using these bands that we stick around the tree, and they're fully electronic. And so they're measuring the diameter of the tree every day or so. We can program them to measure as frequently as we'd like. And you can see that the plants will start to shrink during the day as the plants are using a lot of water. And then overnight, they expand back to where they were. And over time, that expansion increases and increases. So we can follow plants very precisely and really know who's growing when, what part of the season. And we also use physiological techniques to measure the water that's moving through the stem and to measure the photosynthesis and photosynthetic rates that the leaves are having on these plants. So we know who's water stressed. We know when they're growing. We know when they're moving water. And then we can start to piece together who's responding when. Why are some species really abundant here and not abundant there? And we also have some really large-scale plots where we do spatial analyses over about 125 acres, 50 hectares, where we're following over 65,000 individuals, and we can
look. So virtually every tree in that little area, you've got your finger on its pulse.
Well, that's right. We're actually following the 65,000 vines. There's about a quarter of a million trees that are also being tagged and followed in the same area. That's a separate study, actually. But we're looking at everything. And for the first cut, we can say who's where and why. Are they over-dispersed? Are they dispersed further away from certain areas than we would expect? Do they have certain affinities to different soil types? Do they like disturbance? Do they avoid disturbance? What species like these kinds of conditions and why? And what are their characteristics? You know, what do they have high nitrogen in the leaves? Can they fix a lot of carbon really fast? And so we can start to piece together these fundamental questions in ecology, primarily why are species where they are? What maintains high diversity in these really diverse ecosystems? I mean, of this 65,000 individuals and well over 200,000 trees, there's about 500 species. And that's a lot of different species. The species richness is quite high. Some of these areas can have well over 1,000 species. And this is, you know, much more than you'll ever find in North America.
So do these woody vines, are they attracted to one type of tree versus another? Do they gravitate to certain types of wood and others are essentially left unbothered? Or are they democratic in how they attack the rainforest trees?
Well, that's a good question, actually. And that's something that we've looked at quite a bit. they seem to be fairly democratic. I mean, everyone suffers. All the trees suffer from the vines when the vines are there, except for a few tree species that grow really, really fast and don't put out any branches. And they're just basically these little poles that go straight up. They can grow 5-7 meters a year, which is a huge amount, you know, 20 feet or so. And some of those species can outrun the lianas, and they don't seem to have a lot of lianas on them. But that's really maybe 1% of the tree species that we found. Most of them are negatively affected. And we know this because for the past, 12 years or so, we've been doing liana cutting experiments where we remove lianas and we say who does better in an environment where there are no lianas, and we compare those trees to our control areas where we don't cut the lianas. And we can then start to say, wow, these species really benefit or these other species really suffer. And that's important because as the lianas increase in abundance in basal area and biomass, some trees are going to suffer more than others. And that's one of the big questions that we're testing now.
You raise a really interesting point about removing these lianas or these woody vines. Is that a practical solution for the threat itself of these vines taking over the forest and essentially squeezing out the big trees?
Well, it is a solution. It's a very difficult one if you're talking about cutting vines in the Amazon basin, which is so large that you just couldn't. You really, logistically, you just couldn't do it. If you're talking about managing smaller forested areas, sure, you can do it. If you're growing trees for harvesting, all the foresters know that you cut the vines before the trees get too big because otherwise the vines are going to reduce their growth, reduce their reproduction, and also reshape the way the tree grows. Because when a tree starts growing and it has a bunch of vines on top, it starts to grow a little bit fatter and it's a little bit shorter because it has a lot of weight on the top that's acting as a lever. And so they have to be a little bit more solid. But that means they don't grow as tall and they're not going to get as much sunlight if their neighbors are taller. So when people are growing trees for forestry and to sell the timber, they basically cut all the lianas from that area of the forest.
You're listening to UWM Today here on WUWM. So good to have you with us this week. I'm Tom Lujack, and joining us in the studio is Stefan Schnitzer. Stefan is a professor of biological sciences at the university, also a member of the new School of Freshwater Sciences. And we're discussing the work that he's been doing in concert with the Smithsonian Tropical Research Institute in Panama, studying the proliferation of these woody vines that, in some cases, are taking over parts of our tropical forest. As we talk about the impact that these vines are having on trees and the trees' ability to store carbon, I think most of our listeners get it. They understand that's a bad thing because we need these trees to act as sponges to hold the carbon dioxide in. Stefan, has your work taken a look at the impact that these woody vine takeovers are having on the animal life in the trees or in the forest? Any sense of whether the growth of all of these vines is disturbing their habitat and affecting their ability to reproduce?
Well, that's a great question. That's something that we've just recently started to investigate. The vines, you know, most people who are working on trees view the vines as fairly detrimental to tropical forests. But the people studying animals are always asking, hey, what is this species? Because my monkey eats it all dry season. Or we always find our small mammals climbing these vines. And so the vines actually are really important for tropical forest animal communities because what they do is they provide structure. You know, the trees have a big, big stem that goes 30, 40 meters up, and then they have all their leaves. The vines add this horizontal structure through the rainforest, and they also connect one tree crown to another. So arboreal animals, they just travel from tree crown to tree crown, not really like Tarzan, but in that way where they just go from one tree to another, and they don't have to go down to the forest floor where a lot of predators are waiting for a nice meal to come down from the trees. So the vines are really important. And when you find a lot of vines in a certain area, you tend to find more small mammals. And you find a lot of birds will use it for habitats, primarily because it's a predator-free zone for the most part. I mean, you can escape from your predator because your predator can't sneak up on you because they have to make a lot of noise going through the vines.
You hear a lot about the equilibrium that exists in nature. Is it possible that nature will fix itself here, that if there are too many vines, some bug or some virus will come along and begin to take control away from the vines so that the trees can begin to grow better?
Well, maybe. So that's a great question, because some of our other research on trees, what we found is that the younger trees never grow well close to their parents. If their seeds disperse far from their parents, they grow and they grow more in an enemy-free area. These trees, what we're finding out is really exciting, actually. We published a couple papers on this a couple years ago. Each species tends to have certain pathogens that are very specific to that species. And if the seedlings, if the small offspring can get pushed away from the adult, they do so much better. And if they're growing near the adult, they're kind of sickly, and the adult seems to hold this disease. But the adult is big, and it can handle a little bit of disease. A small seedling in the very dark understory of a tropical forest can't really survive for very long, and we found this to be true. But the vine, so when you look at just the spatial pattern resulting from this, what is called a negative density dependent relationship, meaning where there are a lot of large individuals, you tend to find the seedlings dispersed further away from the adult. We look for the same pattern, which we find in trees for the vines, and we don't find it. So we're not sure how they're doing it, but the vines seem to be resisting some of the disease from their parents. And so nature is to some degree self-correcting and self-regulating until it's not. And then we don't know how to explain what's going on. But you know, vines are doing well, but that doesn't mean they're actually going to take over the whole forest. It's still really beneficial to be a tree. You know, these trees are, once they gain a canopy position, they can be there for 500 years. And they just reproduce and put out a lot of seeds, and those seeds get dispersed away from them, and they do that year after year after year. Some of them don't reproduce a lot every year, but they reproduce a lot over 500 years. And so being a tree is still really beneficial. And what we're finding is the Achilles heel of these vines. So everyone thought, well, these things don't seem to die. They never disappear. How do we control them? We're finding that their mortality rates are much higher than those of trees. So even the big vines, and I think what's happening is this. So the vines go up into the trees, and then they travel from treetop to treetop just looking for light and new places to put their leaves that don't shade their other leaves. And when one of those trees falls, I think it rips the vine out of some of the previous trees. Now, the whole vine may not die, but it gets pulled down from the forest crown. And trees fall frequently in tropical forests. They're really dynamic. About 1% of the tropical forest per year turns over. And so the vines are getting pulled out of the trees, climbing back up, getting pulled back out. But big trees, really big trees, once they have their vines pulled out of them, they're too big to climb. So they stay vine-free for a long, long time. So if you can deal with the vine infestation for the first 100 years, 150 years, then you might be in a good position to be very successful. It's a long time, but it's a good strategy.
How did you get interested in this kind of work? This is fascinating.
Well, we've been studying the basic ecological questions and the fundamental questions in ecology include what maintains species diversity, what mechanisms allow species to coexist, and whether that's stable or a random process. And the second large question of ecology is, why are there so many species in certain places? What determines their distribution? And so by studying these fundamental questions in ecology, we can then start to look at these other questions that come along, and including the increase in vines, which we weren't looking for. That was a complete surprise when that popped out at us. And in fact, we just recensused one of our sites in Costa Rica for the third time because we hadn't had long-term data. Well, it was long-term, but we hadn't done multiple censuses. And what we found is that the rate of increase in vines is going faster and faster. And so this is alarming because tropical forests not only now are changing, but they seem to be changing much in a way that's far more accelerated than we thought.
This is a really good example why basic research is so important, isn't it?
Absolutely, because these aren't things that we could have ever predicted. We weren't even thinking about whether vines were changing in relation to trees. This is an offshoot of our fundamental studies on the basic research of tropical forests, how they regenerate and what maintains their diversity. But what we stumbled onto is this increase in vines may have huge ramifications for carbon storage and the global carbon budget, which is of clear importance now. And almost all scientists fully accept that carbon dioxide is one of the greenhouse gases, and the Earth is changing, and it's changing fast.
And for someone who operates a business or a big industry that deals with those carbon questions, this basic research that you're doing showing the impact that these vines are having on the capacity to store carbon could have big financial impacts in their business.
Absolutely. That's right. And so it's interesting because our research program, you know, thousands of miles away in some little patch in the Republic of Panama may actually indicate large-scale changes throughout the tropics which affect everyone, including residents of Wisconsin and North America.
Your family, they travel with you when you do some of this research, don't they?
They do. They're with me in Panama from January till May, mid-May or so. And students from UWM come down to Panama at that time too. They're maybe extended family. But my wife and two kids are with me when I'm in Panama. And then this time of year, so beautiful in Milwaukee this time of year, we like to be back here where we analyze data and we write up papers. And a lot of my people are still in Panama right now. They're in the field. We have a lot of field workers. And so I travel back and forth a bit this time of year. And then the fall I usually teach class or two.
How do your kids like being in a tropical forest part of their year?
Oh, they love it. They love it. I mean, especially our kids are very young, and young kids seem to hate putting on clothing. So when you're in the forest, you know, they can just roll out of bed, and it's warm, it's nice, and it's a wonderful place to live. And there's other kids, and we live in a nice little community. It's great. My family likes it a lot.
One other note that I'd like to touch on. You said that you're actually working on a partnership with Milwaukee Public Schools.
That's right. We run what's called a Research Experience for Teachers program, and that's sponsored by National Science Foundation. We've run it 5 years in a row now, and we usually bring 2 to 3 teachers, Milwaukee Public School teachers, to Panama, and they're there anywhere from 3 weeks to 5-6 weeks, and they participate in our research. And it's really great for us to get their perspective on the research, and hopefully it's a great experience for them. And we've done it for a number of years now. We're hoping to continue that in the future. In fact, we're looking for private funding to keep this program going, because National Science Foundation has been very generous. But at some point, they may decide that enough's enough. And so we've been aggressively looking for foundation funding to keep this Research Experience for Teachers program going.
And what a great way for those teachers to come back to their classes here in Milwaukee and tell the story of basic research and maybe get that next generation of scientists started right there in a MPS classroom.
Yeah, that's what we're hoping. I mean, the teachers are really so enthusiastic. And then when the students realize that they're actually down there doing this work themselves, I think it's a very different experience than just showing a video or showing the reading from a book about what other people do.
Stefan, fascinating work. Keep it up. We'll have you back on as you continue to make these discoveries in the tropics.
Great. Thank you very much for having me, Tom.
Stefan Schnitzer, UWM's professor of biological sciences, a member of the School of Freshwater Science here in town, and a research associate with the Smithsonian Tropical Research Institute in Panama. Well, that's all for this week's program. Thanks so much for taking a few minutes to learn about the amazing people and programs at UWM. Take care, everybody. See you next week. I'm Tom Lujack.
You have been listening to UWM Today, the weekly program where you meet faculty, staff, and students at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee who help make a difference in the lives of people in southeastern Wisconsin through their teaching, research, and community service. To learn more about UWM, go online to uwm.edu.